Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. As usual, I'm your host, Cody. And we're continuing the theme of January of the Coen Brothers movies. As the last couple weeks, I'll be doing covering two different movies this week. Movie one is Burn After Reading. Movie two is True Grit. And we'll go from... We'll start with Burn After Reading. Burn After Reading is... very similar to, I think I've talked about this before, very in the tune of Fargo. It is, it's a black comedy. It's written, produced, edited, and directed by Joel and Ethan Coen. It stars a handful of returning, I should say handful of returning. It has basically George Clooney, Frances McDormand, Brad Pitt, John Malkovich, Tilda Swinton, Richard Jenkins shows up. You have J.K. Simmons is in here. It's got a bigger cast too, but that's the main people that we have in it. The reason it's very similar to Fargo is it's one of those, much like a lot of their movies, where it just kind of picks up somewhere, tells a story, and then disappears. This one is the comedy styling. And the outlandish characters are very reminiscent of the characters from Fargo. Tilda Swinton's character, for example, is very dry. She is very curt in it. And that goes counter to a lot of the other characters, especially your counterpart would be both John Malkovich and George Clooney. Because that's the romantic triangle that there is. Frances McDormand plays a character very unlike her character from Fargo, but also very very similar to a lot of the characters from Fargo and other movies, where they're very almost living cartoons in a way. It's pretty awesome way they do the characters. So George Clooney gets top billing in this one. He's in most of it, he's majority of it. But the standout character to me is Brad Pitt's character. He is basically plays a fitness coach at this gym called Hard Bodies, which is run by Richard Jenkins. It's also where Frances McDormand works. The main thing about his character is his both confidence and stupidity in equal measures, and the way he does things. He's very dumb, but he knows a lot, but doesn't mean he knows what he knows. You know what I mean? This part where he, him and Frances McDormand find this CD at work. Well, actually, another coworker finds it there. They believe it includes secrets from the CIA, and they're going to ransom it back to the CIA, to John Malkovich's character, Osborne Cox, for essentially a reward, because he heard this one term one time that he thought was what it meant, and then it just went down from there. But he's trying to be very sly about when he goes to meet Osborne Cox, and he keeps saying the name Osborne Cox out loud, and he's so amazing. And the little things he does, like pulling a chew bubble gum from the side of his mouth to re-chew it, the way he's a fitness guy, so he's always looking to renew his fuel source. So he's always eating food and always drinking something. It's just a really funny way they do it. George Clooney character is a cheater. He cheats on his wife with many women. First you think it's just one, but then you find out it's multiples. He has this thing about running. And he has this secret that he's building for his wife that you think is something sinister at first, because of his relationship with Tilda Swinton's character, Tilda Swinton's character, Katie Cox, who's the wife of John Malkovich's character, and he goes to reveal, like, you have this, they make this thing where you think he's this really George Clooney's character, Harry Farrer, I think is what they call it, his name. You think he's very sinister because he works in the State Department and he has all these things. He's very proud of the fact he's never shot his gun in the line of service and things like that. And then so you see him building this thing. He's doing it in the basement. He's welding it and he's constructing something. And he eventually goes on a date with Frances McDormand's character, Linda Litsky, who they bang. She's just enamored with him because he's everything she wanted. He's very attractive. He is good in bed. He's very funny. He likes humor, which is the thing she's looking for. And so they go back to his house where he's told her that his wife left him, and so he's been lonely. He even stages the house like she took a bunch of stuff and left it at a wreck. And he decides he's going to show her this project he's working on, and he shows her it's inside this locked cage in his basement. So you're like, oh, this is going to be pretty crazy. He's gonna it's like a torture machine or something. So he goes to it. He pulls the sheet off of it. He's so proud of it, and it's a wooden chair inside this metal frame. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And then he's like, I saw this in a gentleman's magazine, and I was like, wait, what? And he hits the chair, and a levering mechanism happens, and the chair starts to rock, and a giant pink dildo shoots up from the crotch of the seat, and you realize it's a sex toy. And he's building it for his wife. He doesn't actually tell Frances McDormand's character why he's building it. And she's just like, holy. And she's, at first you think she's going to be completely and utterly disgusted by this. And she's just enamored with it. And I was like, this took a fucking turn. And it's fantastic the way they do it. And he's so proud of it. And he's like, they wanted so much money for it. I said, I could build that. And so here it is. And he said the most expensive part was getting the giant dildo. That is this secret he has, and he's so proud of it. And it's just this, the way they build, they lead you into thinking one thing. When he reveals it, they make you think she's going to be aghast and appalled by what she's seeing, and she's just enamored with it. And she's, you can see she's like, oh, I cannot wait to just ruin this thing. And you're like, it's just you're like, holy shit, like, this is nuts. John Malkovich's character, Osborne Cox, is a CIA agent, or former CIA agent, who quits his job because they've taken him off some job he wasn't doing well, and he goes all anti-establishment and is like, you guys aren't the CIA, and you find out later on that his dad was part of the CIA, and he doesn't believe this, that the CIA he works for is like the CIA his father worked for, and so he quits his job, and he decides to write his memoirs, which is actually a bunch of things. And then basically his wife is, Tilda Swinton's character is, fed up with it, so she's going to divorce him to be with George Clooney's character, who has no thoughts or plans to leave his wife whatsoever, because she's definitely the moneymaker. She writes children's books. And so he's playing her along this. And so one of the things is that leads to the spiraling out of control for many characters is the disc that is found in the girls' women's locker room at Hard Bodies is actually a disc copy of the financials, and I think copies of the memoir that John Malkovich has been writing that the secretary of the divorce lawyer accidentally leaves at Hard Bodies, and that's when they find it. And Brad Pitt thinks he knows things, sees it, and knows, oh, these are government secrets. And then that's where the story starts to spiral out of control, And the best part about it is you have this big cover-up that's happening and these dead bodies that end up piling up and these conspiracies. And the whole thing is seen, I mean, obviously you're seeing from the character's point of view, but you keep getting these glimpses of the CIA. And there's this part where David Rosh's character goes to J.K. Simmons' character, who is the CIA supervisor, and he breaks it down for him, and he's confused about what's going on, but so is CIA Officer Palmer, who's played by David Rash, and he's trying to explain it to him, but you can tell he doesn't even know what's actually going on, and the fact that, like, Linda Litsky and Brad Pitt's character, Chad Feldheimer, have gone to the Russians to sell these secrets because Osborne Cox wouldn't give them a reward for it. And they're like, but why? We don't know what's on this. It's like garbage, because they have a guy inside, the CIA has a guy inside the Russian embassy. They're like, we don't know why they think they want this. It's just this hilarious. And then it plays off even at the end when George Clooney character accidentally kills, well, it's not by accident. He kills him because he thinks he's breaking into the house, but he shoots Brad Pitt's character. And so he's seen by a CIA dumping the body. And so they have all these things, and they're like, at one point, he's trying, I think it's him, he's trying to escape the country, so they pull him off a plane, and J.K. Simmons' character is like, just put him back on a plane, we don't care if he goes to Puerto Rico, we don't have extradition rights, don't have extradition clause with them, so it's no big deal. But the other funny part was, the Russians are basically, like, they tell Linda Litsky they don't want to buy these secrets because they think it's all bullshit. And so she has all these demands. And so when J.K. Simmons gets told about the demands, and the demands are to pay for her plastic surgery, he's just like, it's fine, just pay for it. It's no big deal. And it's just this long thing of basically just, that's all she's been out for, is trying to get money to pay for these surgeries, because she believes she needs all these augmentations because she's old and aging and all these things. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, that's it. That's all of, I'm not going to break down everything bit about the movie, I try not to. But that's the reason why I like this movie, is the characters and the situations. But that's it for Burn After Reading. Next up, we got True Grit. True Grit is, a lot of people believe it's a remake. Technically, it's not. Technically, it's a adaptation or a secondary adaptation to a book by the same name of True Grit. Book written by Charles Portis. Way back in 1968. Originally, the first adaptation was done in 1969, starring John Wayne and Glenn Campbell. But this one, directed, written, produced, and edited by George Clooney, and executive produced by Steven Spielberg, stars Jeff Bridges as the character that John Wayne played. Who's Deputy U.S. Marshal Reuben J., his nickname Rooster Cogburn. You have Matt Damon, who plays Texas Ranger LaBeouf. You have Josh Brolin, who plays Tom Chaney. You have Barry Pepper, who plays Lucky Ned Pepper. You have Haley Steinfeld, who plays Maddie Ross. You have Domhnall Gleeson, who plays Moon. And there's a bunch of other people you'll recognize in as well. Those are your top actors in it. The main story, if you don't know this, is Josh Brolin's character murders Maddie Ross's father, who Maddie Ross is played by Haley Steinfeld, and she's out for revenge, so she plans on paying, basically finding a way to kill him, to get her revenge. And then she teams up with Deputy U.S. Marshal Reuben J. Cogburn, or Rooster Cogburn, as he's known by everybody, to basically exact revenge and things like that. You have Matt Damon's character, Texas Ranger LaBeouf, who is this cocky, no-nonsense Texas Ranger, who is basically pursuing Cheney for the murder for the Texas State Senate senator of a Texas State senator, as well as obviously for as well he's being chased by Cogburn and Maddie as well, so they cross paths obviously. And then so on and so forth. And from there, it's just this sprawling. It came out at a time when it came out in 2010, and it was a departure from a lot of what the Coen brothers have done. It is basically it's listed as an American revivalist Western. Western revisionist Western is basically meaning it's they revise the way history says things have done. I don't know how that's actually supposed to be done. Actually, I can probably look it up what that actually means. Revisionist Western or anti-Western is a subgenre of the Western film and traces to the mid-60s and early 70s. I guess it's a different way of doing Westerns other than the spaghetti Westerns that everyone came to know and love, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, it has a very, heavy dramatic sense to it. There is some humor in it. Not like it's humorous, but there are some humorous moments in it. Has some of the best acting of any of these characters or any of these actors' performance or careers. And was nominated for a shit ton of awards. I didn't even look up to see what it actually won. Let's see if there's a list here. For Academy Awards, it was nominated for a bunch and lost all of them. But it was nominated for Best Actor for Jeff Bridges, Adapted Screenplay, Art Direction, Cinematography, Costume Design, Best Director, Best Picture, Best Sound Editing, Best Sound Mixing, and Best Supporting Actress for Haley Steinfeld. Amongst a ton of other awards that it was nominated for. Critics' Choice Award. Actually, Critics' Choice Award was another. What was the other big one? It was right. Broadcast Film Critics Association. I knew it was in there. They only ended up winning for Best Young Actor, Actress for Haley Steinfeld, but they have tons of nominations, way too many not win, no, some losses in there. They only won a handful of them, which is a shame because it's a fantastic movie and it should have won way more awards. I got a nominee for obviously for reasons because it's fantastic. But I was saying that the roles that were in this by these actors. So Jeff Bridges as Rooster Cogburn is fantastic. Josh Brolin's Tom Chaney he's not really in it a whole lot, but when he is, he's really good. He's just this very stoic, scary-ish in a way, outlaw. Donald Gleason's really good in it. Matt Damon is fantastic in it. Barry Pepper's is really good in it too. Barry Pepper's had a lot of misses in his career. Not even bring up Battlefield Earth. But Haley Steinfeld is really good in it. Steinfeld, I can't say her last name. Steinfeld is really good in it. She was very young at the time, 2010. So, I mean, how old is she now? She's 22? So, in 2010, so if we just take 9 years off of that right there, so it tells you. She was 14 when she did this movie. 13 when she did this movie, sorry. 9 years. She was 13. I was right, 13. I can't do math, apparently, in my head. So she's actually, she has a really bright career ahead of her right now. She's done quite a few things, but just this year, she's had two hit movies. She voiced Gwen Stacy and Spider-Gwen in the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie, as well as she played the female lead opposite Bumblebee in the Bumblebee Transformers movie. She was, I never saw Pitch Perfect, but apparently she's in that. She's really good, I guess. But she was in Edge of 17, which is, she's really good in that. Ender's Game, she was in that. She was really good at that. Did you see what other movies I've seen her in? That actually might be the only things I've seen her in. That I've seen her in. I mean, she's been in a handful of movies. She was in that Sons of Tucson show. I didn't realize that. I only watched like two episodes of that show, but she's really talented. Apparently she's a singer too. I did not know that. And that helps from Pitch Perfect, I guess, because they have to sing in that. But she has done, she's won a bunch of awards early in her career, which in 2010. Majority of them all for True Grit, because like I said, she was amazing in that. But she's, she was on Jimmy Fallon, I think. It was Jimmy Fallon. She was singing, and I was like, oh shit, like this girl actually can sing. And then I found out that was her song that they were singing, that Jimmy was singing, and I was like, oh, so she's an actual singer. That makes a whole lot more sense. But yeah, she's really talented. I was very surprised. But yeah, anyways, so she's really good in that. The movie itself is really good. Highly recommend it if you like westerns. Highly recommend it if you like Coen Brothers movies, because it is different than a lot of Coen Brothers movies, but very. But if you're used to their movies and their weird things they do in some of their movies, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is an example of the weird stuff they do. Hail Caesar, another one that has a bunch I'll talk about next week. That has a bunch of weird stuff in it. But one of the scenes in this movie is very similar to a Divergent scene in The Big Lebowski, where he has a dream sequence. There's a dream sequence in this too. It's very, not, they're not very similar. I'm just saying the way they do them is very similar, and it's a very mesmerizing scene in this movie. But that's it. Yeah, I think it's really for the True Grit as well. I think that's it for this week's episode. As for what I'm reading, this week I'm about to I finished earlier in the week, actually the day after I recorded the last week's episode, I finished the third Magician's book. And then, like I said, I really enjoy those books. They're very interesting. The other book I started reading was the newest book in the Space Team series that I've talked about on here before. Which, I mean, pull it up. It's the Time Titan of Time Must Die, I believe it's called. But let me make sure I have that correct. I should have pulled it up before. Nope, that is not the right one. Sorry for this dead time. Here we go. I clicked the wrong link. So it is called... I'm sorry. The Time Titan of Tomorrow is the name of the book. It's one of the ones he released last year. It is fantastic. If you've read the other ones, like if you didn't listen to what I said about them and you read them in general, then you know, I don't know how Barry J. Hutchinson keeps making these books so goddamn funny. But I mean, this is, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is the ninth full-on book in this series, and he keeps coming up with crazy stuff. He definitely borrows from other stuff, and he's not afraid to even bring it up. But it's super hilarious. And there's just the situations he puts him in, and the stupid shit that goes on, and just the characters themselves are just amazing. He puts a lot of emotion into it. There's a lot of poignant scenes in it. And it's crazy because it's such a goofy book that when you start to have those scenes in it where it's very powerful, you forget that you're watching a movie about a fucking idiot who's driving around in space with a bunch of criminals and no good nicks and trying to do good, reluctantly trying to do good. But really, they all want to do good, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, Space Team, The Time Titan of Tomorrow is the name of the book, the ninth book in the series, not including the holiday special I did not read, because I heard it's a bunch of short stories, and I figured it doesn't have to do anything with it. And it doesn't, because The Time Titan of Tomorrow picks up right after the Planet of Japes. I didn't read this is the eighth book. There's two books of shorter ones, a lot of weird space shiz, and then the holiday special. I didn't read those two. I read, eighth straight up book in the series, and it is fantastic. I did pick up Dial D for Dead Man, which is a spinoff book featuring Dan Deadman that you meet in one of the other books, in the Guns of Nana Joan, I believe is the book he shows up in. I've yet to start reading it. I bought it was on sale and I forgot I bought it. And then I bought the new Space Team book because it showed up and it was also on sale. And then after I got done reading The Magicians, I popped it up. And because I bought the Space Team book after I bought Dial D for Dead Man, I forgot I bought it. And I just started reading this one. And I just realized the other day that I had Dial for D for Dead Man. So I'll be reading that probably next. Actually, not next. I lied. The next book I'm going to read is The Passage, which is based on the new TV show featuring Zach Morris or Mark Paul Gosselaar, if you want to call him by his real name. But it's a new show on Fox that has a very promising trailer if you want to read or look at that. But I thought, I'm gonna check that show out. So I'm gonna read The Passage, and it has a lot of good reviews. One of the reasons it chose to make a TV show out of it. But it's a first book of a trilogy, written by a gentleman named Justin Corin. And I knew nothing about these books before the TV show. And whenever I see a TV show is based on a book series, I look into it. And this one has really good reviews. So I was like, oh, and it went on sale. So I bought it also. And I didn't forget I bought it. That's the reason I waited until the show started. And I was going to start reading it. And then I'm an idiot. And I started reading the Space Team book. And so now I'm behind. But it's okay. I'm recording the TV show to watch it after I finish the book. So... that's it for this week's episode. We started ramble about the shit in there. I will tell you more about that book later, I guess. That's it for this week's episode, everybody. Continue on next week with two more Coen Brothers book movies. I believe it's Hail Caesar. And, hold on, I have my list here. Hail Caesar and Inside Llewellyn Davis. Well, that'd be a fun one. I'm going to rewatch that one, too, because I don't remember everything about it. But I do remember John Malkovich's character is fantastic in that movie. And then I do enjoy Hail Caesar quite a bit. More so than I ever thought I was going to, because the characters are just fucking fantastic. Which... if you haven't caught on to the theme of the Coen Brothers movies, all their characters are fantastic. So that's it for this week's episode, everybody. And as usual, let's be awesome.